Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this week's Castaverse podcast with a K. My co-host, as ever, is James McLean. James, how are you?
Very good. It's very surprised to be here. I wasn't expecting this. This is a fairly impromptu emergency bat phone podcast, isn't it, really?
Yes, it is. We basically recorded a podcast already this week, and then we kind of recorded another one just because we're just like that. And also, Andrew Cartmell asked us to. And you don't really say no to a former script editor of Doctor Who, do you?
No, absolutely not. Especially when it's quite a good reason they have as well. It wasn't like he was being some dictator bastard person. There was reason for this to come out this week, because they're actually, this project that we're talking about in this podcast needs your help and attention as soon as possible, really, which is why we all felt it was a good idea to move this forward.
Absolutely. So we're going to be talking to Andrew Cartmell and his colleague in this project, Hans Christian Vang, about the Fan Fiction Illustrated, which is a non-profit comic strip for fans by fans, with various writers and artists involved. I think Aid Salmon's involved. And there's a lot to it, and it's a pretty thrilling project, which you can invest in using the Indiegogo system, which is a crowdsourcing platform. Just before we go into it, before we go into the interview, just so you know, Indiegogo is crowdsourcing, as I say, which means that you invest money, but if the project doesn't go ahead, you get the money back. That will be the case with this. If it doesn't raise enough funds, and you can find more about it at indiegogo.com/FFIDW. If it doesn't raise enough funds, you'll get your money back, so you don't lose out, basically. They've got over 20 days left to go to raise the £15,000 goal. They're approaching 1,000 at the moment. We're getting behind them to do this because we want to see this in print.
Yeah.
So we'll go into the interview.
Every now and then, the world of Doctor Who is turned upside down by some master plan. Some smart idea by some smart rubberhead or beard face wanting world domination. Well, now we have a brand new master plan. This master plan comes from the head of Hans Christian Vang, a self-confessed producer and publisher of comics and animation stuff. You could call his master plan a master plan's master plan, as it involves one more master plan fans have hotly discussed for years. No, not that odd kiss chase between the Daleks and the Doctor, but the master plan of once script editor for Doctor Who, Andrew Cartmell. Both are here today to talk to us about their master plan. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi, the most important thing to say about the master plan of the master plan is that the master isn't in it.
Well, there we go. John Sim will be very upset about that.
Actually, I thought he was, wasn't he great? The way he reinvented it, it was, you know, seeing that young kind of slick guy in that role, it was very good.
It was, I loved it. And I must admit, I'm one of those fans who I kind of wish he would be able to come back for the 50th, but it doesn't sound like he's going to.
Well, I was just talking to somebody about the 50th yesterday, and it's very interesting to think what they will do. The smart thing might be for them just to draw on the post-Russell kind of era and, you know, gather together all the people from the new series, just partly because so many people from the old series are old or no longer with us.
But you're not. You're here. You're alive. And
yes, that's the important thing.
Well, this leads us very much into what you're doing at the moment. I mean, Hans, maybe we should start with you since this is your brainchild. I mean, do you want to explain a little about this magazine concept that you're running at the moment, that you're looking to get pre-orders for, and how pitch it to the people out there, to the single listener?
Or Hans has to pitch it. Can I just say that I've always thought brainchild is a really creepy phrase.
It's a lot more important and interesting than it probably really is. Well, I basically just read the Gareth Cavanaugh and Colin Brockhurst's fanzine Warp Warp when it started coming out a couple of years ago, and I was really interested in it and really impressed by it. But I kind of I was a little bit disappointed by the lack of comic strips in it, actually. So I just thought, what if you did a complete mirrored image of it and put plenty of comic strips in it? And did maybe one or two articles or no articles, as it may be, whatever you want to do. And so I started speaking with the writers that I'm familiar with, and obviously I've got a load of I've produced comics for like 12 years now, so I've got quite a few writers to speak to, and quite a few of them like Doctor Who and Star Trek and that sort of thing. So a few of those were interested in actually contributing to it. So I thought, why not give it a shot? And here we are today.
We owe it all to Facebook. We owe everything to Facebook, because that's how, in the days before that, there's no way that Hans could have got in touch with me.
The internet, we owe it to.
It's incredible, the internet, how it's opened up that the ability for fans and past creators to sort of come together.
And small producers.
Mm.
Even less English people talked as Danish people. That never happened before.
Okay. Skype is a Danish invention too, which is funny.
So, Andrew, you both spoke on Facebook, and that's how you...
Well, we got to know each other. In fact, there's this guy, and I thought, well, that's a weird name, Hans Christian Vang. Who's that? But I saw all this comic art he had, which was really cool. And I've always been a great comic book fan. Ever since I was a kid, I grew up with the classic Marvel and DC sort of Silver Age era. And I've always just loved vintage comics. Actually, to tell you the truth, I've always loved comic art, but comic writing has generally been terrible. Until Alan Moore came along, I thought most comics are rubbish. Yeah, you know, and I don't think he's been surpassed since. And when I was script editing Doctor Who, I used to use Alan Moore as a great model of storytelling. I'd give people the old Titan reprints of things like Halo Jones to try and orientate them in terms of science fiction and good, clean, fast storytelling. Also, if they picked up any of Alan Moore's depth and intelligence, that was a huge bonus.
His stuff was brilliant. And I have to say, without it sounding fawning, what you were doing at the time seems far more closely related to where the new series went than perhaps to the stuff beforehand, as if you were sort of perhaps doing stuff which perhaps was ahead of its time in some ways for Doctor Who.
Well, it's interesting to speculate whether that similarity is all because we just took a more modern approach, or whether they liked what we were doing and thought, yeah, let's go in that direction.
That's possible, because the plus also the new adventures which followed through Virgin, which you were involved in with a few books, weren't you, yourself? That also probably helped consolidate that approach, maybe, because they were sort of quite heavily influenced, weren't they, by how you were taking it.
That's very true. That's very true. And also, because they were books and they weren't constrained by the usual television limitations, they were considerably more adult and had a larger special effects budget.
And yours were very, I mean, I liked yours. I have actually the last one of the war series, which I've not read yet, and I've had it like for 10 years sitting on my shelf, which
like
I keep meaning to.
Do you realize that wines do eventually go off?
So oh, no, don't say something. That. I really liked the first two. I especially liked the second one, actually. I think that was my favorite. It's a very great opener. I remember the opening chapter had a hell of a lot of suspense. I remember being set in a room, and it was all to do with the car, with drugs. I mean, it's been like 15 years since I've read it now, but...
That was Warhead, presumably.
Yeah. Yes.
Warlock.
Warlock.
Because there was Warhead, Warlock, and Warchild.
Yeah, it was Warlock.
So it was the War Trilogy. And my sister said if I ever wrote another one, I should call it Wartog. Or maybe Wardrobe. That's how seriously they take me and my family. But so, yeah, that's the thing, that you do a trilogy and you get all the titles similar to try and link them together. Well, the first thing that screwed that up totally was they called the first one Cat's Cradle, because there was these three books completely unrelated, which they tried to make seem related by calling them Cat's Cradle this, Cat's Cradle that, and Cat's Cradle the other. So that particular master plan didn't pay off.
But Fan Fiction Illustrated, which is what we're talking about here, which is what Hans is publishing here. We'll put the web address on the website to go with this podcast, but it's indiegogo.com, FFIDW, Foxtrot, Indigo, Delta, I can't remember. Yeah. I should know.
Nobody
this.
Can they? That's the one that nobody can remember.
Whiskey.
Yeah.
Foxtrot, Indigo, Delta Whiskey.
Have a quick whiskey and you'll remember.
Have a quick whiskey. Yes, I think that'd be a damn good idea. There's a whole load of information there about what you're planning, Hans, and it's got bits of artwork as well to give people a feel of what's going on and get excited by this.
It's really cool. Actually.
It is.
Hans has access to these fantastically talented illustrators.
Again, thanks to the internet.
But it is very important, isn't it, Hans, that people are interested in it. It is important that people actually get involved now to help sort of bring this together.
Again, it's thanks to the internet. There's this whole crowdsourcing, which is a phrase didn't exist 10 years ago. Mm. And it's if people are enthusiastic about it and think they would enjoy it as much as we would enjoy it, then we can come up with this great comic. So it's kind of a beautiful feedback system.
And you've got some nice, as they call them in these, as you say, these crowd. Did you call it crowd, please? What did you call it?
Crowdsourcing. But Bruce, it's got to be crowdsourcing.
Crowdsourcing, I know. I mean, I've seen a few of these do very well. I mean, and I've got another website which we promoted one of these, and they did very well because people, you know, once they hear about it, they come rushing forward because you have these perks which are involved as well, which people get for actually contributing to financing it.
Yes.
To get it out. So that's why it's important for fans to want to get involved now rather than wait to see if something
Absolutely.
Comes out later.
And Hans important. And I have agreed that if it goes over $1 million, we're just going to take the money and disappear into the Southern Hemisphere.
Ah, there you go. It's spoken like a true human. I appreciate that. So, okay, here's a question. I mean, I hope...
If things don't go well, I mean, as you say, it has to be done now. I mean, if this crowdfunding campaign... It finishes without actually bringing up enough money to do the 1,000 units. That's the minimum print run, which makes sense to do.
Yeah, because we're constrained by things like printing costs and also postage costs, shipping out the comic when it eventually arrives.
Unfortunately, because I'm in Denmark, I'm obviously the one who's going to sit about and do all the hard work and everything. I can't very well ask Andrew to do that.
I'm far too lazy.
Well. Never mind that, but the prices of the Danish postal office are just incredible. So that is kind of a handicap, but hopefully we can overcome that. And
it's not a handicap; it's a limiting factor, but I think we can get over that.
Yeah, I hope so, but I'm kind of tentative about that. Let's see what happens here, because if there aren't enough people who are interested in this, then it's just I'm afraid it's just going to die.
Essentially, what Hans is saying is that there is a window of opportunity here, and we want to get through in that window.
Mm-hmm. And you have, Andrew, I mean, while, as you say, you know, Hans is doing all the work, you're very full on this, aren't you? That sounds very rude. That sounds almost romantic.
That's very much Andrew. I mean, he's actually the first issue. He's script edited almost the entire thing.
The great thing about this is, I, as you know, there's a lot of unfinished business with Doctor Who, the way it ended in midair, as it were. And then with the big Finnish audio adventures, we began to not only scratch the surface of the stories that hadn't been done, but also there was this great added dimension, because I made a joke earlier about the budgets being bigger in books. Well, also the special effects budgets. The same goes for audio adventures. You can do things that you just couldn't do on the television series, probably even today. And the wonderful thing about comics is you can do this incredibly rich visual stuff. And in the same way that a radio is unlimited in what you can do on your effects, comics, you can do that, but also you can see it. It's great.
Yeah.
So, let's have a quick talk about the master plan, because I think a lot of people are going to be very interested in this. And that's obviously something which is really important to this whole promotion. Will the aspects of the master plan that you are going to be divulging through this magazine, will it still be canonical to all the other bits, as you say, the big finish? I mean, Lung Barrow sort of borrowed a lot from you.
We want to make everything consistent, absolutely. And there may be the opportunity to explore more deeply those stories that we've already begun to put out there.
That sounds good. Okay, so here's a question for both of you. There's a lot of dirty words out there, you know, groin chisel is a very dirty word.
It's
two dirty words. But okay, here's another one which has got two then. Fan fiction. There's a lot of people. Fan fiction has a very negative value in
connotation to it. Yeah.
Exactly. I want to ask both of you what your views are on the stigma of fan fiction and whether your views have changed.
I'd like to say that I can 100% guarantee that Fan Fiction Illustrated won't have any slash stories in it.
No.
You probably lost 20 people.
Actually, I just thought, yeah. it should be nothing but slash stories if we want to get the money, yeah.
We can do a, you know, like a free, an extra little magazine called Slash. Yeah, no worries. Come back, everyone.
Davros and Ace, a Croton and...
Yeah, the mind, doesn't
Croton.
It?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh,
I'm
yeah,
sorry, but... I cannot sit here and sit by and not say Croton on Croton. That's absolutely disgusting. You should be ashamed of yourself.
Two spicy Crotons.
Yes. Jeez.
So, but Bat, have your view, I mean, obviously your views on fan fiction are very positive to be involved in this. Have they always been that way? Have they changed over the years, culminating in this project?
Well, from my point of view, the fiction, and as in terms of the writing and the scripts, is going to be coming from me or people who I'm editing. So I don't really have any worries about fan fiction per se. I just have the usual concerns that any writer editor has to make sure the stuff is good. Now, as for fan illustration, all you have to do is go on the internet to see what fantastic talent is out there. I mean, some of these people are amateurs in the sense that they could do one good drawing or maybe one good page, but there are actually people out there who can do a whole story, who are pros who are just waiting in the wings, and that's where Hans comes in.
Precisely. I mean, every fan fiction illustrator or writer is just a pro in the waiting. I mean, lots of Doctor Who writers who are professionals now were fan fiction writers back in the day. And that's the same thing with the comic book writers. I mean, Alan Moore was a fan fiction writer back in the day.
Good point, Hans. Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Christian here, I mean, he did he's done a fan fiction published through Cerberus, and I've done when I was at university and I was studying, I did fan fiction on Batman and stuff, which was read by Batman people in the comic stuff. So none of us here are against it.
Read by Batman because that would
that would have been interesting.
Yeah,
it'd just been all about his parents, though. It'd have been so boring. So none of us here are we all come from the same sort of cloth. We all see that there is professional and there is interest, and as you say, there's roots in fan fiction, which makes it worth exploring early in a weird way. It's kind of exciting, this sort of project, because what you see now in this could be something that you will see of people later on down the road.
That will be wonderful. Yeah, it very much is just about quality. I mean, I have nothing negative to I've got no negative thought about fan fiction as a term, as a phenomenon at all.
And we're the gatekeepers. I mean, Hans can make sure it's high quality art, and I can look after the words. So I think we're not going to let anything, out into the wild unless it's good.
Is Adrian Salmon? Is that the artist who used to work for Doctor Who in 2000 AD?
It is the Adrian Salmon.
Aid's a good guy. I met him a few times. He drinks at Gareth's pub in Manchester.
Yeah, I love that pub, Lassa Gowney.
Yeah. I met you there a few years ago.
Gavanaugh's pub, isn't it?
It's so nice. You get to meet all these folk there, and also the pies are really good.
that brings us back to Warp Warp and what Hans said earlier.
Yes. Let's give Warp Warp a good old shout out to
Gareth Kavanagh and Colin Brockhurst and everyone else involved with it.
Magnificent magazine. I love
it. Absolutely. And it's kind of had this strange effect in... some people were discouraged and other people were kind of enthused and energized by seeing that a Doctor Who fanzine didn't have to look like an issue with Celestial Toy Room.
A dog's dinner, I was going to say. But yeah.
You know, it's not
wonderfully slick, wonderfully professional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'd be very surprised if some of those guys didn't end up on DWM someday in the future.
Yeah, Gareth Kavanagh, all of his projects are really classy projects.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he did the Black Scroll stuff before Warp Warp, of course. And he's done this, I don't know if you know, he's done a few shows as well.
Well, he's done a lot of stage shows, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. He organised Midnight, an adaptation of Midnight.
Yeah.
And then there was the two, there was the Robots of Death and Storm Mine as well more recently. And there's other things going on. There was
the Nigel Neal. Was it the year of the
Sex Olympics, and there was Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads, and I believe they're doing the Good Life as well.
Yeah, and the pies are nice. What a great pie!
That deserves it to be a show all of its own.
The pies being nice might be reason enough for me to get on a plane.
You should come over. Pie and chips, mate. That's what you want at the last again.
I can't wait to come over there and go pub crawling.
Can I ask Andrew, just going a little off topic from Gareth and his wonderful pub. Sorry, but something that's interested me is that, I mean, I was about 10, 11 when your stuff was airing through Doctor Who. So I grew up with it and, I loved it. But there has been for a lot of time, a lot of the McCoy era got a lot of hysterical spitting from some quarters of fandom. Have you found that that's changed over the time? Has it got warmer? I seem to have seen, from what I've read, people seem to look back now with a different view to that end era than perhaps they did at the time.
Well, there were certain stories that really polarized people, most notably the Happiness Patrol. And that, it's funny you should say about changing views. In recent years, that's really, people have really begun to reevaluate that one in particular.
Good.
God, you know, I've just actually, the Happiness Patrol, that's the one that I was watching not long ago, wasn't it, Andrew, that we spoke about with the two fat ladies?
and Fifi, never forget Fifi.
That's the one, correct?
The two fat ladies, was that not Paradise Towers?
Oh, it might have been.
Which one was the two fat ladies?
I like the two fat cannibal ladies.
Yeah,
that's Paradise Towers.
Paradise Towers, all right. No, I just it just popped into my head. I immediately thought.
Who are you? I hope they pop right back out again. Well, that was a classic example of a mistake they made, because they gave them real knives, and we got into a lot of shit for that. I hope I can say shit. Can I say it again? Yeah. Shit, just to make sure.
I think maybe Jennifer Patterson and Clarissa Dixon Wright got their idea from that. That was a stupid thing to say. I just couldn't stop. Sorry.
You couldn't stop. But no, in answer to your question, I think Happiness Patrol was the most, the story that attracted the most controversy, and that's the one that's turned around the most. There were a couple others here and there that seemed to polarize the fans, but there were a lot of people agreed on the ones they really liked, which would be probably Remembrance of the Daleks, yeah. Curse of Fenric, Ghostlight, Survival. But when I start numbering them, you know, there's all these other great ones too. I think there are, you know, a lot of strong stories, and the ones that people really took against are now being looked at in a new light.
I think they should. I mean, Silver Nemesis is one that often got a lot of hits. But I mean, as we were saying, I think on a previous podcast not long ago, one thing I love about Silver Nemesis is that end scene with Ace versus a Cyberman. And I know some people go, oh, you know, it's ridiculous with the coins, but it's pretty much the first dynamic action scene in Doctor Who. You don't get anything on that scale.
They used a Steadicam for that chase scene. That didn't happen on Doctor Who, don't you?
There's a scene on the bridge, correct?
Mm.
Yeah, it's inside this building with an internal walkways. It's a very good place to chase.
It was something, and I really loved. And I think what hopefully people will be looking for in this is what people loved in that end era was this question of who the doctor was. Has that changed at all for you, Andrew, over the years?
No, because my take on it always was that the doctor had to remain a mystery. So I didn't really ever have a rabbit in my hat to say the doctor actually turns out to be Jason King or something. It just wouldn't work. So the whole point was just to pump the mystery back into the story and make the doctor, but to make the doctor big and formidable, because he'd become a bit of a clown of late.
Well, that's something else that they seem to carry through into the new series, wasn't it? I mean, it wasn't quite there in the Paul McGann thing they did, but when it came to the new series, there seemed to be a lot of attributes from those last two seasons, which seemed to pepper the new series, which wasn't really in the rest of the show.
Well, the one that I really noticed is the way the companion was a continuation in the lineage of Ace, which I really liked. Mm. So it's sort of urban reality, you know, a girl from a contemporary sort of working class setting.
And also that the idea that the companion actually had far more relevance to where the plot was going or how the plot would resolve.
In a Doctor Who story, you've basically got the Doctor, the baddies, and the companion. And the only one you can really fill in the background of in a rich way is the companion. If you start doing it with the Doctor, and they do many times in the era of the various eras of the show, they have filled in the Doctor's background. I always felt to the detriment of his mystery.
Yeah.
And they've done that in the new series as well.
There's always a temptation to do that. And yeah. I always think it's a mistake. It's just like Terrence Dicks. It says there should be no snogging in the TARDIS.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's something that what is it you always call it, Christian? It's the IKEA, Gallifrey, the IKEA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look that's appeared in the sort of 80s, you know, late 70s and 80s, as everything suddenly became institutionalized in the background. I don't know, while they were obviously trying to make out that he was an eccentric to a very mundane, sterile bureaucracy, you automatically start to root him in Earth. There becomes no feeling that there's anything really beyond him that you can understand by going down to your IKEA or to your office block. which is
a flat back doctor.
Well, some of the sets did look a bit flat back in that, I must admit, but I kind of liked the lung barrow approach, which I believe lung barrow had a lot of influence from where you were taking Doctor Who through the seasons, and it seemed a far more interesting Gallifrey if you had to see Gallifrey.
Yeah, I loved Mark's take on Gallifrey because it sort of, it was like a Mervyn Peake take on it. You know, it was like Gormenghast. It reinvested a certain scary eccentricity to it. But I was always very concerned, even when we were discussing Lung Barrow as a potential television program, that we didn't want the Doctor to turn out to just be another, you know, is it the Prydonian Academy? Just one more graduate, you know? He had to be something special, something beyond that.
Well, he certainly is, there's no doubt there. So going back to the magazine, I really think it might be worth just going over some of the perks that are available for people who actually contribute right now to financing this magazine, because hopefully that might encourage people to open their
to help us out. Yeah,
exactly. So I mean, you've got different perks for different for different amounts of money spent. Hans, do you want to go through any of these at all?
Yeah, well, I Hans did want me to include amongst the perks having people over to my house for the weekend, but I drew the line there.
Yeah, you can have your meals prepared and your bed made by Andrew Cartwright while he recites one of his novels for you.
I don't know about the bed made, but I can cook a damn good meal, so they missed out on that one.
For £300, he could actually come to your house and he could change the plan into a master plan.
Oh!
You see what I'm doing there, badly, but no. But yeah, you've got, I mean, I'll help you out here. I mean, I'm on your page at the moment. This is all, of course, at Indiegogo.com. So you can see this all for yourselves. Yep. But down the right-hand side, you've got a list of perks.
Video that I put together as well.
And there's also a video. Yes, there's a pitch video.
A terrible video. I would have liked that one to be a bit better.
The pitch video is very good because it does actually explain it probably far better than I am. So if you are utterly confused by all four of us here, then... Yeah.
I know I am.
Exactly. Well, that's no surprise. But could we embed this as well on our...
Yes. I still want to cook meals for people. That's what I want to do.
But because there's only a set period. I mean, at the moment you've got 26 days down on the clock, haven't you, from the time of us recording this? Is that how long you've got to reach your goal?
25, actually.
25. Well,
yeah, boy, the clock is ticking. But, you know, that offer of cooking a meal is still out there. Never mind the Cartmel Master Plan, but Cartmel Master Chef.
Oh, there we go. You can't be a bit of master something. So yeah, so you've got up to $200 is that dollars here, because it's an American site, isn't it? $200, you've got the writer's option, and there's a whole load of things you get up to that point, but there's still perks for the small amounts. Any amount is
appreciated.
And I noticed that somebody put in an amount of their own, which I is undisclosed, but I'd like to say thank you very much to that person, because I assume it's just a contribution without actually wanting the magazine.
Yeah, and one guy went for one of the deluxe packages, didn't he, Hans?
Yeah, one person went for the $100 package, which is very much appreciated. So he's going to be talking to you on Skype for as long as you can bother talking to him. But you know, we've put five minutes on the perk description there, but obviously if you two hit it off, I suppose you can have a half an hour or whatever, you know, up to you.
He can drop around.
Yeah, sure.
You can have a secret clock there, so if he goes over the time, you can charge him a few extra $100 and he won't know. And you can surprise him at the end.
Driver. Yeah. No, it's great that these people are responding already, and through the medium of
crowdfunding.
Guys like you, yeah. We will reach some more people, I hope.
Well, that's it. We hope that, you know, you guys listening to this, I know we say that you're usually just a singular one listener. We are kind of hoping you're not today, that you've split in some quite grotesque multitude and you're going
cellular
to
division.
Cellular division. I think that's what happens when you have a script editor here.
I have the impression that you have quite a few people following just over us, so I do think you're right about that today.
We do, and I'm kind of hoping that, especially with Andrew here, script editing my rather poor comments, he will actually
always
will get
a
few more people. Yeah, that's it. And we hope people will come and fund this, because, you know, fandoms, as we say, is the catalyst. I mean, so much of the new series is based on a catalyst of fandoms from the 80s, as you said. I mean, there was Paul Cornell, he's another person who was Stephen Moffat, Russell T. Davis, you know, these are all fans who kickstarted through fan projects, and that's why these things are so important.
Yeah, we might be finding the producer of tomorrow today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because he'll be so appreciative to you, Andrew, he should, I don't know, would you actually, that's a good question. If you were asked, would you go back and do anything with the new series of Doctor Who? You know, well, I'm talking about a story or something.
I would love to write for the new Doctor Who, but when people ask me this question, I always say that they should talk to Ben Aronovich, because he's actually got a Doctor Who idea, which is fantastic. they should hire him tomorrow. I mean, I'd love to do it, but Ben's actually got a story ready to go.
Oh, they should do, because I love Ben's work.
He's a fantastic writer.
And I love Transit as well. Few people said that at the time, although, again, I think people look back at Transit, which was a New Adventures novel.
It was a bit shockingly adult for people, I think. I think that was the trouble with Transit. But, it again, as you say, it's coming into its own now with people.
Absolutely. So, if this goes ahead, the 50th is next year. I mean, something interesting that me and Christian were talking about the other day, there was recently Russell T. Davis came out and said that he'd sort of approached BBC Books about doing a graphic novel for the 50th. As a fandom, do you think that would be kind of good, especially for the classic era, which, as you say, Andrew, possibly won't get as much recognition in the 50th for the show?
In a way, because they could bring back all the great characters and all the great actors in visual form in a comic. That would be probably the most effective way of doing it.
Would you bring back the two fat ladies?
Only if you're allowed to use knives.
Touché, Mr. Cartmel, touché. Brilliant.
Actually, if this first issue does go forward, I've got something very incredible planned for issue two, which would be next year.
So if people actually buy into this, God, I'm starting to sound like someone off one of those TV buy channels. If people buy into this next year, we will have something that would actually possibly give the 50th anniversary, at least a fan
perspective. Yeah, a bit of a classic, a nouveau classic panache or whatever you want to call it.
I'll call it that.
I'm actually in production on this at the moment. I've got Eddie Robson, Jean-Marc Lefissier has turned in a script for it.
Cool.
For the fifth Doctor. Royal McGraw of DC Comics has written an 11th Doctor script, of which I've actually made public two pages from, which are finished in artwork form. On the Indiegogo page, he's walking about with Amy Pond, and they're talking to little elephant-like things.
I see it.
That's from, those two pages are from Royal McGraw's story for the 50th anniversary issue.
That's very cool, and Lefissier is a very interesting character too. He did a lot of work with Moebius, the French graphic artist, also known as Moebius.
Moebius, yeah, I love Jean-Marc Lefissier. And Donald Tosh.
Donald's a great guy. I met him a few years ago for the first time at a convention. What a great old gentleman, and one of the people who worked on Doctor Who right back in the day.
He is absolutely amazing.
And he's very keen to start writing comics. He really got into it.
Yeah, he's really he keeps thanking me for giving him the opportunity, which I think is absolutely nutty, because I'm just rolling around joy from working with him.
Yeah, this project should go ahead just so people can see
his story. Yeah,
it's kind of cool because it's a bit like blackmail, isn't it? It's like, you know, if you don't buy him for this, you're not going to see this. You know,
it's like blackmail except legal.
It's a bit dirty. I kind of like that.
he's actually doing the first Doctor story, which makes perfect sense, and it's a really cool story going on during the American Civil War. Oh, he's about halfway done with it. Let's see who else is on board. Donald Tosh, Lefissier, Lance Parkin might do something.
Wonderful.
Oh, we love Lance.
Yeah, we do.
We haven't quite settled things yet, because we're actually working on an animation project together. So it depends on whether or not there's time actually to do it.
Yeah, and I might do something. Don't forget me.
Of course. I'm sorry, Andrew. Yeah, Andrew's definitely doing the 7th Doctor. Something that I think is quite cool is David Gerrold of Star Trek fame is doing a Doctor Who story.
Oh, yeah.
Trouble with Tribbles guy.
Yeah, he's very nice.
Fantastic. I love that story.
He's supposed to turn his story in December, actually. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Because this goes back right to what you were saying at the very beginning of this.
That issue is going to be completely with prose, unless, of course, I do have a few empty slots, and if I can't fill them, I will find some good fan writers, and that would be that make me quite happy personally. But it's going to be tried to do completely on a professional basis.
But it's more, isn't it? I mean, while it's called fan fiction, it's illustrated. It's not really. It's an expanded idea. So say it goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, Hans, that you know that the way that the world is changing now, that fan fiction is evolving, because it's not as fan fiction as people tend to think of it. And I've seen this in the stuff that I work with, a lot of stuff in America with Millennium and the X-Files people. It's the same sort of thing where you're getting professionals, you're getting new talent, you're getting people in the middle there, and everyone coming together into something which is far more than just what people conceive as fan fiction.
Yeah. It's a shame. Maybe we should call the magazine Artron again. I don't know. I mean,
it's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't have said it because it's your project. Part of me thinks, you know, does in one way does fan fiction undersell it? But then the other part of me says, well, in a way, isn't it good that it's selling fan fiction in a positive light? I don't know which is the right way, but
yeah, I mean, it is fan fiction being in that. I mean, the concept for the magazine is that 50% is going to be done by a pro. And in this case, it's going to be Andrew for quite a while, maybe throughout the entire magazine's run, if it gets going, depending on you fans. But obviously, I do want fan writers in the zine to bring new people in and let's get some new blood out here. And that includes artists as well. Yeah, maybe we should come up with a new title for it. At any rate, right now it's called what it's called, and it might well be called that when it goes to print. But Artron is a definite, is it something that I've considered calling it. But
who cares what it's called? Just
really
put money into it. That's what we're saying here.
As long as it's good.
Exactly.
So why don't we say that somebody could come up with a name? You know, if they wanted to make a contribution, they could name the magazine.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if we should charge for that though.
But. Oh yeah, we should charge the most for that.
I think maybe this is turning into an editorial meeting, but we could actually call it Artron and then just have the fan fiction illustrated as a subtitle.
That would be very cool too. But the main thing is we want to say thank you to Christian and James McLean for giving us this chance, to, you know, as this platform to reach people about it.
Yeah, I've mentioned to Christian that they're going to be our best friends as far as websites are concerned.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It's such an exciting project, and we'd love to see it go ahead.
The general price for the magazine, the cover price, is going to be $15. But when you actually buy it on the Indiegogo, when you put in a pre-order, that includes the shipping, no matter where you are in the world. So the stone option for $15 just is a very big thank you from us, and you get a copy of the magazine. And we give you a JPEG or a GIF or whatever it ends up being for your Facebook account, which is to be used in this cover thing that they've started using on Facebook now. So you can show the world that you're a fan fiction illustrated supporter. It's going to be an original piece of artwork that's not been taken from one of the strips or anything, just completely original. $20, it's the bronze option. You get all of the above. Plus a new comic strip in PDF format, which is going to be available only to people who actually pre-order. If by some magical happenstance we get enough orders to print the 1,000 units, $30, this everything mentioned above, and you get your issue signed by Andrew. We're hopefully going to have quite a few things sent over to you, Andrew, to sign.
I'll be looking forward to that. The rest of them mostly involved inconvenience to me, didn't they?
Yeah. At $35, you get a big poster as well with another original illustration not taken from anywhere else. And then there's the crazy $100 platinum edition, which one has very kindly ordered, where you can ask Andrew your burning questions about his time on the program. I should think that's quite a cool thing.
A personal conversation with me.
And the $200 is everything above. You get the 5-minute call or 10-minute call or whatever Andrew decides to be kind enough to give you. And if you have a script finished, you know, not War and Peace 2 or anything, but a decently sized script, he can edit it for you and tell you what you're doing wrong and basically
treat. I can give you a consultation.
Yeah, treat you like a peon who's writing for him on the program. Those are the options.
I think it's brilliant. And if you think of how much you guys out there, you single listener, probably actually pay and what you do at conventions, how much you spend out there, you know, $100, $200, especially when you convert it over to our money, isn't horrendously much when you consider what you're getting for it as well, especially if you're going for the consultation on top.
Well, we don't want to be too outrageous.
No.
Well, in the UK, the $15 option, that's just £9. That's got to be a bargain.
Oh, absolutely.
That's about the price of you know, the magazine that started all this, really, isn't it? Warp, Warp. It obviously, it includes shipping. Even if you're in Africa, I'll ship
it to
you.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm not out to make money on this.
No, that's
absolutely. £9, $15. If everyone listening went for that option, then we'd be back here talking about this in 6 months' time, wouldn't we? Saying how
great. If 1,000 people were to put in $15, we would have that issue all done and dusted.
So it's definitely worth considering. So apologise if it sounds a bit of a, as I say, a bit of a shopping channel thing here, but I think it is. No one's making any money out of this. It's not. You know, it's not made for to make Hans cash. It's a fan
fun now.
Exactly, it's a fan project. Please get involved.
And Andrew's not making any money on it either.
It's Fun Fiction Illustrated.
Fun Fiction, yes.
Fun Fiction, yeah, brilliant. Well, that's ultimately what it is.
As I mentioned, I've got an animation project in the burner, in the cooker, or whatever you call it in English. So that's where I'm going to get my money from. This is just for fun.
In English, we call it in the microwave.
Okay. So this is really a labor of love for me, and I would love to be able to continue doing one or two issues per year. That would just be so much fun. And obviously the big one next year, I mean, if we get that far, it'll be 220 pages of just absolute magic. Then, you know, I couldn't imagine anything more fun to do, really, with my spare time.
Well, I think we will leave it there and hope that's got everyone's groin chisels very excited and they'll get involved in this. Because it is all about fans getting together and doing something. So,
groin chisel.
I don't know.
You think about it, Hans. Just put it from your mind.
Okay.
I'd like to say thank you to Hans, to Christian, and to James,
yes,
and everybody who's listening. It's great.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed for your time. You're very kind.
Thank you very much there to Andrew Cartmell and Hans Christian Van. And we do really, really, really hope that you'll actually get involved in this. I was thinking last night, I think I'll put some money towards it myself. I like these crowdsourcing projects. I like anything that sort of defies that standard rigmarole of funding through big industry, which means that you only very, very obviously commercial or popular things get go-aheads, or, you know, people with hands, fingers in high places or whatever. And it's great.
Fingers in high places.
I know, it's a little bit of a mixed metaphor there, maybe somewhere.
Very appropriate for the Seventh Doctor.
Yes, I suppose so. Very, very true. I wonder why they got rid of that. It was something that there was another project I saw going on from a couple of writers, American writers for Millennium, and they're doing a similar crowdsourcing it's a different company, but the ideology there was very, very good, because it was simply saying, you know, we're trying to make a TV they were trying to make a TV show, and they were saying, why do we have to sit and wait for stuff to come out that isn't tailored to us and might not work because it's not been tailored to anyone? Why not we all fund stuff which is tailored to us and pay towards that and have something we actually want? And that's really what this is all about, is giving you something you actually want.
Yeah. We're definitely behind it at Casterus, and we're going to be featuring a bit more over the next few weeks. Just to underline before we go how these things work, I've invested in a couple of crowdsourcing projects in the past, and, you know, I don't have hundreds of dollars to throw around. It's, you know, it's just like a few quid. But sometimes they don't work, and sometimes they don't come off, and you get your money back, as we've said. But in this case, there are cases where you don't get your money back because within the agreed time frame, because an extension is added. That's happened with the Trust Me, I'm a Blue Peter presenter by Mark Curry, which is languishing at 4% of the entire number of pledges needed.
Ouch.
Yeah. That isn't something that would happen with Fan Fiction Illustrated, though. They have, as we're recording this, they have 25 days left. So we've got Doctor Who fandom has to move quickly. This is a quick action required here.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think it's worth reiterating that is that you don't have anything to lose, but you do have something to gain. But you don't have something to gain unless you actually do something now.
Yes.
That's the key here. So, like I said, everyone is very keen on moving this forward. As we said at the beginning of this, Andrew is very keen that we got this out as soon as possible, just simply for that reason. It's not just to help him and Hans, it's to help you lot as well, because if it doesn't make that deadline, then it probably won't be happening. So it's in everyone's interest to jump up and step up to the plate. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. McCoy, eat your heart out.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. Thanks very much to Andrew Carmel and Hans Christian Fang, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.